You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast. I'm Sarah Custer. This week, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released a report saying that urgent and unprecedented changes are needed to keep global warming to a maximum of 1.5 degrees Celsius. If not, we could risk significantly worsening the risks of flood, drought, extreme heat, and poverty for hundreds of millions of people. But my question is, what can university leaders do to ensure that their institutions' activities aren't contributing to global warming? And also, with the power to mold young minds, what are they doing to make sure students learn about environmental sustainability right across the curriculum? Last month, I was in Geneva at the European Association for International Education's annual conference, and I sat down with two women working to combat the impact that universities' internationalization activities has on the environment. I spoke first with Marianne Mensa. She's the International Executive Director at the University of Côte d'Azur in France, and she's previously worked at a few international development agencies. Currently, she's focused on projects where research and education can work together to combat climate change. We're speaking here at the European Association for International Education's annual conference, and mobility, especially carbon footprint in this sector, is a massive topic that hasn't really been discussed much in at least the past decade, but it's something that's coming up a lot more. At the opening session, the president of EAIE announced a certain number of trees were going to be planted to offset the carbon footprint of people coming to the session. So my first question to you is, how can international educators specifically reconcile the damage that their sector is doing to the environment?
Well, of course, offsetting, carbon greenhouse gas emissions that are caused by travels and this kind of event is important. We have to balance the damage somehow. And then we also have to work as international educators on tools that are, low carbon, such as e-learning tools, webinars, and all this distant learning means that are now available and that allows us to build communities, to build network, to deliver knowledge, but at a distance.
And you're working with the University of Côte d'Azur in France. You've worked with loads of other international people on this topic. I'm wondering, how do you deal with it whenever people are coming at this issue from very different cultural contexts?
Well, I think that diversity creates creativity, brings creativity to the table. And we do need creativity to solve the issues posed by climate change, to bring new solutions on mitigation and on adaptation to climate change. So I think the diversity, taking into consideration the diversity of opinion, is key. And then here, as international educators, this is our job, actually, to bring this diversity into our universities and to favor the exchange of knowledge between, various parts of the world. So we are part of the solution, so to speak.
And do you think that climate change knowledge, or just general environmental sustainability knowledge, should be something that's part of general curriculum?
Yes, because this is a defining issue of our times. And how do you want to sort out a problem without understanding the cause, without understanding the process, and without understanding what the solution can be? And right now, we can't wait too long. We have to find key solution in terms of energy transition within the next 10 years to avoid a tipping point where things will become really more difficult to manage. So to me, each student should know how to calculate its ecological footprint and to know what are the alternative solutions that are more sustainable in terms of consumption and production means, so that they can start to change behavior and act effectively. I just want maybe to add on this.
Yep.
It's because this year, for instance, if we take into consideration the fact that the Earth Overshoot Day you know, the day where actually humanity has consumed more natural resources than it can actually regenerate. It fell this year, this day fell on August 1st, and it's each year it's earlier and earlier. We have no time to waste. We really have to educate people on how to be more sustainable, have more sustainable way of consuming and producing things.
I think people listening to this will, almost all of them will no doubt agree with what you've just said, but I think there is also a sense of just being overwhelmed, that the problem is too big already, that they don't know what they can do, or maybe any small effort that they do make isn't going to be enough to turn back the tide and push that date even later into the year. So what would you say to universities who are just like, I'm just too overwhelmed, it's too big for us, we can't do it?
Well, I would say that we are at a time where we need collective action, and humanity has proved that it could solve great issues such as slavery on a collective, in a collective manner, but it has to be bottom up, so to speak, to be able to influence decision makers, to overcome lobbies that are really slowing the process. Younger generation become more aware of the risk, what is at stake for their future, for their well-being, and they're willing to engage. And so we as international educators, as university, have to respond to these new expectations. But it's very, sometimes we can be hopeful when we listen to young people and how they want to change things. They are really key in the transformation and the change of behavior.
What would you say to a university who is in the United States specifically, where this topic has become extremely politicized, and they might even be combating people within their own institution who will say that climate change doesn't exist, that that's false? What would you say to that?
This actually had actually a dual impact. One is actually to divide the society very profoundly on this topic and make it political, while it should be, it shouldn't be. It's factual. It's a scientific fact. So it's not a question of belief. It's factual, and it's everyone will be impacted by climate change. But so I would say, hold on. And move forward, because a lot of American universities have opened great program research, provide a lot of also education tools and programs for free. I'm thinking of MIT, with its platform, MIT Collab, which has over 70,000 participants from all over the world and looking for solutions to climate change. I'm thinking of Harvard, who is making climate change a cross-cutting issue in different field research fields. And Columbia, the Earth Institute, Berkeley, all these great universities are making breakthrough in finding solutions on climate change.
You had a session today and you had someone from UNITAR speaking in your session, and they've developed some tools that universities are finding quite useful. Can you run through those?
Yes, UNITAR had developed a very interesting platform called UNCC Learn. And it provides free content, learning content on climate change to universities and the civil society around the world for free. It also organizes some dialogues on climate change. It provides governments with support on elaborating learning strategies on climate change. So UNITAR is really doing a great work, and it was a great chance to bring them here at EAIE to talk about this free resource available on climate change learning.
Have you found in the work that you're doing, the international work that you're doing with climate change, because the United States has got such a huge influence globally, have you found that the recent politicization of climate change in a very negative way from the United States, is that impacting the work that you've been doing?
Well, I must say that sometimes it has been discouraging to see so much denial on an issue challenging, you know, the future of humanity, and also the financial impact that this political decision had on organizations working on finding solutions on climate change. But we have been through a lot of turmoil, and I think that you know, we had some great breakthrough also with the Paris Agreement, with all nations agreeing on objectives of keeping the rise of temperature under 1.5 degrees. This was very, very difficult to imagine a few years earlier, and this was achieved. So we have to build on what has been accomplished and to really now find ways to implement the Paris Agreement in a tangible way.
And that was Marianne Mensa from the University of Côte d'Azur in France. I also sat down with Elsa Lemont. She's the director of Pomegranate Global, a company that works with universities to find innovative ways to tackle environmental and social issues. Elsa used to work in international education, and she starts off telling me about the mismatch she saw in universities' missions to empower students for a better future while ignoring climate change. Apologies for the noise on this one. We were sitting outside for the interview, so there's a bit of distortion from the wind in the first few minutes.
I used to work in the international education sector for about 15, 16 years at Australian universities, leading the international operations at a few different unis, and I became increasingly aware of our carbon footprints of what we did in international operations, and also the kind of mismatch between what we claim to do as a sector, saying that, you know, we're empowering the global leaders of the future, but yet we were ignoring climate change in that work, and it's clearly the most compelling issue and challenge that we face. So I set up Pomegranate Global to address that. But I really have two kind of main avenues of approach. One is helping universities themselves see what action they can take to operate more sustainably. That started with their international operations, so obviously looking at, you know, even simple things like offsetting flights and sending brochures out. And it's kind of morphed into something a bit broader, so even helping universities look at, for example, what banks they allow on campus, where they buy their renewable energy from, and so on. And the other side of it is looking at the student aspect. So there are so many ways that students already are interested. Students care about this issue, and they increasingly do. So it's finding ways to help students gain other valuable skills whilst developing better knowledge and understanding of what they can do to act on climate change.
And what's been the response so far? I mean, obviously, the universities that you're in contact with already have this on their radar and they're interested in it. But, I mean, is there some serious consideration of what their actions are? You talk about banks being on campus, but also offsetting carbon footprints with the staff that they're flying around the world every day. What's been the response?
So it's been incredibly interesting. I've spent quite a lot of time in the last year and a half actually building awareness of the issues. And I think,
is this mostly with institutions in Australia where you're based?
With institutions in Australia, but also through speaking at any event I can. API, for example,
yeah.
Doing webinars, trying to raise that awareness. So I'm finding so far that even universities that have, you know, incredible sustainability institutes and maybe great sustainable precincts and infrastructure, they're not necessarily joining up all the dots and making sure that, you know, they have great public transport available, that they have refillable water stations, that they're even looking at, you know, simple things like catering contracts and making sure that there's a higher percentage of vegetarian food available. So simple things like that actually can have a huge difference.
In the context of the international education,
Yes, certainly. I mean, one big thing is obviously make sure that your institution has a policy of offsetting all your flights. Mm. You know, that I actually haven't come across any institutions yet in Australia that do that as policy. I have come across some in Europe. University of Gothenburg, for example, has a great program. Mm. And I'm sure there are others, but that's such a basic. Reconsidering your need to fly, you know, I suppose people sometimes get a little bit scared when I come in and think that I'm going to suggest that nobody should fly anywhere, you know, and here's me sitting in Geneva having come all the way from Melbourne. Clearly sometimes in our world today and in our sector we have to fly, but it's being more mindful of it and making sure that you don't just fly everywhere at the drop of a hat, you know, use more video conferencing. Think as well about more digital marketing materials. Do we really need to send, you know, paper brochures to every single city in India for a recruitment event, for example? And I think there's a real data gap about what is actually needed. So people might say, no, we need paper copies of brochures to give to parents, for example. Where's the evidence for that? Is that even true? It maybe was 20 years ago, but I think there's that gap. And where you do still have to fly, think about offsetting. You know, that a colleague of mine did some research and calculated the carbon footprint from air travel emissions to Australia of commencing international students in 2014. And you would have had to plant 24 trees per student just to offset that air travel.
Okay.
So, you know, that there are organisations where you can actually pay to do that on behalf of your institution. It's not actually a huge investment in the context of, you know, the billions of dollars that this sector makes. And I think increasingly students are going to start demanding that their institutions really do step up to the plate and do more on this.
Hmm. So that is another aspect that you're looking at in the projects that you're doing, is speaking directly to students and giving them the types of tools and information that they obviously want,
yeah,
to try to help in the effort to fight against climate change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, you know, when I started doing this, I was aware that there was danger of me preaching to the converted.
Yeah.
Now, the people who would come to my events were already concerned. What I actually want to get to the point is that, just like from a high school education, you expect basic levels of literacy and numeracy, I think every higher education student should actually come out with a basic level of climate action literacy and the knowledge of what's happening, what needs to happen, the gap between those two things, and what they personally can do about it and what needs to happen on a more systemic level. What I've been so a lot of my work is actually aimed at not the sustainability or environmental science majors, but the people who might otherwise not think about it. And I've been really encouraged. I had a great team of international students working with me earlier this year, doing some research into student attitudes to sustainability and what action they want universities to take or institutions to take. And I deliberately chose four of those six students were not in any way aware of climate issues. They weren't interested at the start. And I was so encouraged by just how much they all took it on and how little input was actually really needed to get them switching their thinking.
Hmm.
You know, literally, you know, a couple of sessions, an hour and a half, and they were really, they got it, and then talking to more students. And they came up with all these great ideas about, you know, ways to reduce waste on campus, to encourage and foster more public transport, and to have community and education initiatives on campus around it.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, there's a whole lot of talk in our sector about the need to add additional skills around creative problem solving, working in teams, working between domestic and international students. And you can actually get students working on issues like this in ways that help institutions tackle environmental issues, but also develop those skills in students.
So it can be interdisciplinary, which is the
absolutely
key,
yeah,
word.
And also that, I think really importantly, that mix of domestic and international students,
mm,
working together on something. Because I think if you're doing something and you care about it and you see that it can make a difference, that can be a really good way of breaking down some of those intercultural communication barriers.
And have you found that there are gaps in awareness or maybe just conceptions of climate change when working with international students?
Oh, absolutely. It's huge, the variation between what issues some people are aware of. If they come from certain countries, they might be more aware, for example, of the effects of health pollution, of pollution on public health. A lot of the students from Europe in particular are very, especially Northern Europe, are really switched on and really understand what's happening. And in Australia, I think there's a real increasing awareness and understanding of the need for action. You know, this we've had incredible drought in Australia. We've had bushfires in winter. I know there's been this incredible heat wave across Europe. I think we are getting to the point where it's increasingly difficult for anybody to deny that this is happening.
Yeah.
And certainly the science is settled. You know, that there's only differences of opinion around the degree of and scale of what's happening, how fast it will happen, and how much the different impacts of climate change will interact with each other. But there's no real actual respected scientist anymore really saying that, that this isn't happening.
And what advice would you give to universities who are in countries where there are people like my own who are denying that climate change is happening and have their own scientists and their own reports coming out to back up that argument? What are people supposed to do to really make change in those institutions?
Well, you know, I think where else but institutions like that should we be calling for more change? You know, universities are bastions of learning. This is where everything is supposed to be evidence-based. And if a university can't stand up and say, well, look, actually, we know, look at all this research that's out here. Look at all the data these days is impeccable. There's millions and millions of data sets that all reinforce that this is happening. So really, I think it's up to universities to step up and say, yeah, we're on this, and there's more that we can do, and we should use our reach to do more.
And that was Elsa Lament from Pomegranate Global. That's all we've got time for today. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to suggest an idea for future podcasts, you can get in touch with me at sarah.custer@timeshighereducation.com. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.